This is the Inner Sphere. Thousands of planets colonized by humankind. Once it was united under the Star League. But for the last 300 years, it has been consumed by savage wars. Until a new enemy appeared. Mysterious invaders known as the Clans. Powerful and ruthless, they struck like lightning, attacking every sector at once. But they made one big mistake. They attacked my home planet. Now in the spirit of the Star League, ancient enemies have reunited. And we're gonna take back our galaxy.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast.
Sort of
Joe,
thing that you
not letting Robert Clark Chan talk over my intro, because Gina's too tired and will fall asleep. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Ray Stakanis.
Knowing is Half the Sleep Cast.
The number of times that I have ruined Ray's intros that never make it to air are legion, and every single one of them is a bright, shining spot in my day.
If we had our crap together better, that would be a fun supercut to do every time Ray's intro has been ruined.
It often appears post credits if you're diligent enough in listening to these episodes.
I will have you know that I have many. I don't know exactly how many, because I'm sure a bunch of them got lost. Some of them are on old drives I don't have access to anymore. But like, I have the raw files for hundreds of episodes of the show, and at any point I could go back and like dig up all of these things. But that
I can't even get you to get me Who Would Win videos that are a month old for our Patreon. No. You're pretending like you're going to do that.
Oh no,
I mean, this is the problem. You gotta abandon Who Would Win Chan and spend all your creative energy on this podcast.
I tried that before and that didn't work out.
No, he got burned out of that after like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He tried real hard for those 2 weeks though. I mean, I give him full credit.
I gunned it, man.
And then, yeah, but much like a Roman candle, he burned too bright and too quickly.
Mm-hmm. Is that what a Roman candle does? I feel like it burns the correct amount every time.
See, and ooh. I think that's the problem, Chan.
Robert Clark
right there. Chan. We hit the afternoon of our recording today. We're recording a little earlier than normal this time. And Gina correctly was like, hey guys, there's nothing to watch. We don't have anything in the queue. So I had to quickly speed through. And I remembered a couple episodes ago, I looked up all the different cartoons that existed in 1994. And I remembered that they were delightful. I think it was 94, I'm hoping, because that's what I looked up. And I found this particular show, Battletech, which is based on a gaming property that I have loved for decades and decades and decades.
And I'm so glad I did not know this existed until now.
I never heard of this or the game, but I went down a Wikipedia rabbit hole and the lore is so thick that I actually thought of emailing my reps, because there was only 13 episodes and this cartoon is in the sweet spot of shows that you, because right now Disney owns the rights. So I was like, I am going to email my reps and ask them to set a meeting with Disney and then pitch them a reboot of this property that they're not doing anything with.
Gina, so can I mention one of my notes? One of my notes right here. This show could be huge in 2024 if it got rebooted, Gina.
Yeah, I mean, like literally when I was reading the Wikipedia page, I was like, oh my God. And I was sort of in between. I saw Alien Romulus over the weekend. It's fabulous.
Oh,
and
great.
I was watching the new Rockstars breakdown of Alien Romulus. Also fabulous. And like the lore is, again, very thick alien lore. and then this felt similar when I was reading. I was like, oh my God, this is the longest Wikipedia entry for what a cartoon's backstory is.
I admit
I was very confused.
That's sort of the thing that I like about it and the thing that I hate about it, because like there are definitely elements of this really thick lore, as you call it, which I don't know, it sounds sounds like wallpaper paste or something that you're talking about, that I was totally into back in the day. But then, you know, you try and cram it into a 22-minute cartoon, and you got to sand down all the edges, and then it just gets really weird because there's so much. Kind of like Dune 1984. Like, by the time you get everything crammed in, you're like, what's left? What is happening here? This is a hot mess.
Yeah, I admit that halfway through the episode, I realized I was not watching the character that I thought I was watching for the entire episode.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, well, I don't know. I clearly don't know what's going on. I mean, granted, I had a very busy day, so I probably wasn't giving it my full attention that I should have. But I think I pulled a Ray with this one. And at the end, I was like, all right, well, I don't know what's going on.
See, wow. If only they'd taken their shirts off. Gina has face blindness for cartoons, but not ab blindness.
Yeah, literally my last note in my notes is, I have no clue what's going on. That's my last note.
Gina got ground down to a Ray for this. That is, wow. That's something
but
else.
I understood enough to know that Disney should let me reboot it, because this is, I mean, if you're going to reboot something, you want something that's not so loved, that only ran for 13 episodes, but has enough lore there already. This would be a perfect reboot, Disney executives. Bob Iger, I know you're listening to Knowing is Half the Podcast right now.
That is true. That is a thing he does.
Gina, you are partially correct, but I copied a sentence from the Wikipedia article to put it right at the end, because I thought I'd bring it up near the end, but I think now is the proper time to bring it up. Quote, the book also provides synopses for all 13 episodes and attempted to address the contradictions of the series with the established BattleTech canon.
Canon
is now such a loaded word that it's like if we were in the 17th century, we were sailing along on our little boat, and all of a sudden, here comes a pirate with a cannon. If there is a cannon, your life is in danger. The neckbeards will come out, and they will be like, how dare you write an episode that contradicts something that was in paragraph 12 of page 262 of the source book written in 1987. You are a monster, and I will dedicate my life to burning down your house.
Look, I'm just trying to say, in 2010's Fallout New Vegas, they definitely make reference to Shady Sands being the home and capital of the NCR. However, in the canonical TV show Fallout on Amazon Prime, they blow up the city of Shady Sands in the year or two before New Vegas takes place. Ergo, no one's talking about it in that game. And this is something that deeply needs to be addressed. Oh my God, I'm doing it.
Can you imagine having a feed full of Rays in your life, Gina? Just like nonstop.
I mean, I've been dealing with a nonstop Ray for 9 years. I think I can handle it.
Yeah, but like times like however many BattleTech fans there are out there, and they'll come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, but I'm one of the thoughtful ones, Jan.
Yeah, that's the sad and scary thing.
I'm the reasonable one. That's the problem.
Well, no, here's the thing, though. If you do go to Disney, one thing we can say about them is they don't have a problem with fandoms of their franchises.
No, known for very level-headed fandoms. Yeah.
Disney is very cool. Very cool fandoms.
Just for the record, BattleTech, you know, and it's MechWarrior is kind of the spin-off games. I had it for Super Nintendo. It was great. It was a tabletop game, wargaming game made by the FASA Corporation in 1984, later bought by WizKids and Tops, and now currently owned, gee, I didn't even know this, owned by Disney.
It was a Saban Entertainment show, which is like the same people who did X-Men, the animated series.
Yeah,
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah, so all of that is owned by Disney. I would be very curious to know, though, if they've ever, because this, again, to me, this is a ready-made IP that someone could sneak onto the Disney lot after they're done recording their podcast tonight, hide under Bob Iger's desk, and then pop up and scream something about future space pirates.
Robots. Giant robots.
It's fighting robots. I mean, what more do you need? You know,
Ray, can you actually explain to me? Because I never actually delved into the whys and wherefores, because like at the peak of my fandom, it was long before the internet, so I couldn't look it up and I wasn't, you know, I didn't know where to look for it. Many of the designs, possibly all of the designs of the mechs in
Tex-Mex.
In the universe, yes, Tex-Mex, in the Tex-Mex universe, the Battle Tex-Mex universe, are old, like, Macross mechs. So, like, where
inspired,
was that crossover?
Inspired by Robotech, 100%. No. Not exactly 100% pound for pound Robotech.
Those designs. The freaking...
standing robots who fight. I mean, all Gundams have the same kind of base formation.
Well, I'm talking about specifically about the one... big mech with the giant rifle arms. That showed up like
now.
Dead
here's
on
the deal.
In the cross.
I will tell you this right now. I remember a lot of the mech designs from BattleTech from when I used to play in high school. Because I used to play the miniature tabletop board game. 100%. We played it a lot. And those designs that came look like they came straight from Macross, I don't recognize from BattleTech. So it could be that they were stealing them
in,
to show that they were like others coming in.
BattleTech, Macross, first thing that comes up is lawsuit. So,
well, there you go. I think they very much lifted them because the space pirate the clans. Mechs were very different looking than what I remember from actual BattleTech. Like we had like an Axeman in there, and before they even said it, I'm like, oh crap, she got hit by an Axeman. I wonder if they call it out, and then they totally call it out. So I was very happy. That was my favorite mech. But anyway, BattleTech, I love the game. This is a very fun game. It was very broken. You could min max like crazy. The general gist of the game for the people at home was that you had like 100 tons worth of mech. And so you would build like 250s or a 75 and a 25 or, you know, 425s if you were crazy, a bunch of locusts out there, like lightweight ones. And then you would be on a map, like a hexagonal grid map with peaks and valleys and water. And you'd be moving around trying to shoot each other, ideally from the side and behind. And it was a lot of fun, you know, a lot of crazy future weapons. And, you know, it was about maneuvering and outmaneuvering your opponents. And it was just a general good time.
Yeah.
Blow up your friends.
Game. Very fun. This cartoon. Maybe not
great.
So much.
Great. This cartoon was great. I'm going to say it right now and put it on the record. I loved this cartoon.
Wow.
It moved a little fast, but I was able to basically keep up with it. And I even wrote a note here just like this. I mean, that's where I got my Gina note. I'm just like, this works. This is nearly like a Battlestar Galactica kind of vibe.
Ooh,
yeah, whoa, I mean, whoa. It felt pretty adult. I'm not gonna lie. Like I got sort of the same vibes from this from another show that I pitched a reboot of to Warner Brothers, which was Pirates of Dark Water, which was another show that ran for one season. Well, because I think it's dead. All of Warner Brothers got fired at some point, so I think it's dead. But yeah, like to me, there's this big mythology, which is not the case for a lot of cartoons that we watch, right? A lot of it is right. Like, look, yeah. what if a tree gnome fell from the sky and now he's friends with a little boy. Like, and that's as deep as the lore goes.
Chan, I don't want you on any more lists.
But like, yeah, this is some deep lore and it doesn't feel like a kid's cartoon. That's for sure. When it involves fucking, yeah, like people trying to exterminate. And again, maybe this is because I had just watched Alien Romulus, which starts out like in a pretty bleak. I mean, I guess all the Alien movies are pretty bleak when there's like one corporation that owns everyone and every planet and forces them to work until they die. But yeah, like this was, I was like, oh shit, this is like some like Weyland Yutani is sending people out to war to pretend that they're on like opposite sides. But then you turn out it's that, then it turns out it's for like to collect collect specimens or something like that. Yeah, this was kind of bleak. And I like bleak.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I mean, look, the vibe is, here we go. Planet Somerset 35th. This is maybe the longest cold open we've ever had in an episode, too.
Yeah.
Planet Somerset in the year 3050. Alien spaceships appear above the Earth and make connection. They make contact. And Star Colonel Nikolai Malthus says, "We are here to conquer your planet. We are the clans. We got the Falcon's claws. Surrender to us, or we're just going to go ahead and take it. You might as well just surrender." And I'll say right off the top, I admire this man's moxie. He's a guy who knows what he wants, is not afraid to say it out loud, and then take it if there are obstacles. Good job, Nikolai Malthus.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah. And then we meet the hero, and I spent the entire episode thinking that like we were seeing the hero at different points of his life.
Oh, because,
right. Oh, wow.
No wonder you had trouble if you thought we met the hero here. I see the problem.
Well, that's, I mean, like we meet like who I think is supposed to be the protagonist. Okay. Yeah. And right. Then like they go to a different planet and they flash a different year on the screen. And I was like, oh, this is him pre-Scar, I guess. Again, maybe I was not paying attention as closely as I should have been.
Well, look, the planetary defenses go Defense Plan Alpha. They pull out their big fighting robots, their Battletech mechs. And it turns out that the bad guys, the clans, Malthus' crew, they also have big fighting robots. And as they start the battle, the bad guys
understood that, like, maybe you should put some guns on the big fighting robots.
It helps.
But they get inside them, right? They're controlling them from inside. Yeah.
Correct.
You got that part. Good for you, Gina.
She's on board. And so the bad guys start, instead of shooting at the big robots in front of them, they just start like wailing on the base and all of the office infrastructure. And they just start destroying all of the Pentagon, basically, which I thought was great. And then they just start wailing on the mechs in front of them, too. And then the three of them, the first two go down with basically no effort whatsoever. The good guys' weapons don't work against the bad guys' armor, but the bad guys' weapons work real well. And they just started like shooting pieces off them, like it's the opening scene of RoboCop. Like, oof, it was rough. And then finally, we get who Gina thought was our hero.
Right.
And he was like, "All right, I'm 1v3. I'm gonna have to get it done." And then inexplicably, and I did not care for this part, we go from traditional animation to 3D wireframe computer animation of this era.
I don't understand how Gina didn't lose her goddamn mind and check out immediately at this point.
Well, because when I read the Wikipedia page, it like one of the first things it says is like it was like known for mixing traditional animation and computer animation. So I was expecting it. And I was just happy that we got like we don't have to deal with it the whole time.
I mean, here's the thing, like that computer animation is trash, but also the animation, like the drawn animation of the mechs is also kind of trash.
Wasn't great. No, they did a much better job with the people than they did the giant fighting robots.
They look like people, not giant fighting robots, which is what I want out of a giant fighting robot cartoon.
Mm-hmm, the best of 1994. And if you've heard other shows that we've done, such as Reboot or, yes, I'll say it, Transformers.
Beast Wars.
Yeah. It's not good. It looks very unattractive. At least with the wireframes, like, I could let my imagination do some work, you know, because I remember video games of that era, and you would occasionally have similar vibes. So at least they chose a style as opposed to just doing what Beast Wars did, which is just throw up all over your keyboard and then let that become the screen. You know,
my imagination was doing a lot of work at that time. Yes.
Oh, Jesus. 1994. Say less.
No, I'm talking about right now watching this animation. I was imagining myself somewhere else other than watching this animation.
No, I'd say right now, I didn't think the animation was bad. Actually, I thought a lot of it was pretty good for its time, especially.
No, for its time.
That CGI stuff was just not up to snuff.
Yeah, I mean,
we've seen worse.
they did what they could with what they had, but remember, you know, like some guy on a horse trying to rob a train. I mean, like, man, just go to the bank. Why you gotta use the ATM machine, for God's sakes?
And I realize that this is the wireframe stuff is how they decided to do a lot of their action scenes, probably because they realized they just couldn't pull off the action scenes.
Yeah.
And so they're like, this is the best we got. Just let it go. Just let it go. So I'm like, this is one way to do it. The commander is the last one left, the good guy commander. He's like, all right, here we go. And I actually flat out loved this moment when he's wearing like a cowboy hat. He's got this big old like implant thing on his head or a scar or whatever. And he's like, all right, I'm about to give you the challenge of your life. And then they blow him up in about 0.5 seconds.
Yeah.
And I laughed out loud.
Wait, is he dead?
Well, he pops out of his escape capsule, right?
Uh-huh.
And then that escape capsule jumps in the air and then hovers back down. And the bad guys just pluck it out of the air and laugh at him.
And at that point, I was like, okay, well, this is, you know, a kid's cartoon. So, like, he's going to be fine. Even though, like, yeah, he's in the hands of this guy who clearly is all about murdering these interplanet folks.
Not afraid to.
And then when they finally were like, when new guy is like, oh, I wonder if my brother made it out. And then the girl starts crying. I'm like, oh, they actually did it. They killed the dude. I'm impressed.
It was very clear where that scene was headed, but they, for a kid's show, stopped it before it got that far.
Yeah, yeah. Although, I mean, I could have stood to see the squished remains of the capsule, at least, with just like a little bit of blood on the outside. You don't have to see the body.
There is murdering. There is murdering in BattleTech. In this cartoon, there is murdering. We will get some later.
Yeah.
I liked it. Nick, he's taking everything for the clans. That's right. Nikolai. I called him Nick because we're on a first name basis now because he's my hero.
Sure.
Nick's taking everything for the clans. He's like, we start here. We work our way to all the inner sphere. And that was our entire cold open. It took a few minutes. And I would say right now it was like at that point, that was just the cold open. Oh man. I like this. I like where we're going here. 3D animation aside. Give me more cold opens.
Yeah, I will say like I did think that this the like including the Wikipedia entry, I like that they just plop us right down into the action. I think that this is a classic case of strong start, boring after the first like couple minutes.
I mean, there's a lot of road to travel. There's a lot of the, you know, the thick lore that you like, Gina, to get through, even just barely set us up with a story. I mean, this is like a basic like Han Solo, you know, smugglers taking on the Empire kind of story. But you still gotta, you know, give some of it in that pilot.
Yeah. Look, they left it all out there as far as I'm concerned. So we get introduced to the inner sphere, which is essentially like colony and colony and colony in this entire settled systems, settled space thing. I've been playing Starfield a little bit. So we have the settled systems where there's just people and they do not all get along. They are all different cultures, different races. They are just different. And they have been fighting amongst themselves. But this outside threat is likely to cause all of them to, you know, merge together to repel the intruder.
Right.
Like the very positive, open Watchmen comic book series.
Hold up.
Very
Hold
idealistic, up. That Watchmen comic book series that said an intruder would invade our country and we would all band together to fight them.
Yes. Hold on.
Idealistic.
Because you are skipping right over the theme song.
Excuse me.
Since I know that you love a theme song.
I do.
And you would only skip over it when it's something that I like, which is to say extended exposition in place of a theme song.
I did notice that.
I'm going
to
play.
This is reminding me that it might be time for another theme song throwdown soon.
This is the inner sphere. Thousands of planets colonized by humankind. Once it was united under the Star Lord. But for the last 300 years, it has been consumed by savage wars.
Okay, I mean,
not a banger.
I mean, it's really moody, intense music behind a lot of story that we got to get through. So this is the way you do it.
I would rather have Star Blazers. Give me a banger instead, and we'll work out the story later.
Here's the thing. Star Blazers is obviously the best.
I love a banger, but this to me sort of reminds me of it does remind me of like a Terminator or like a Battlestar Galactica, like that great like opening of Battlestar Galactica where it's just like, oh, for years, you know, like no Cylons ever showed up. And then one day one did. Like, I kind of like this exposition that is getting us ready for the doom.
Yep. Gina is correct. Ray is wrong.
Well, how dare you? First off, I would like to point out that's now I'm not the only person to compare this show to Battlestar Galactica, and I'm feeling pretty good about that, not gonna lie.
Gina did it with a more nuanced take that was correct.
Yes, smarter.
So take us to the planet Tharkad.
Tharkad. is that a terrible name
canon?
Or is that
I have no idea if planet Tharkad's a thing. It might be. I couldn't speak to it.
I'm going to be honest, this show, if someone said to me, oh, yeah, we decided to make this show, we called up the showrunner and like his EP, they did a bunch of cocaine one night and wrote all 13 episodes in 8 hours.
I'm into it.
Like, if you told me that, I would be like, oh, yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah.
It puts us right in the middle of a fighting robot fight. And they keep yelling at this lady pilot, Carly. Oh, no, Kylie. I heard Carly at first, but now they say it's Kylie. And
is this the bandana chick?
Yeah. They're like, everybody's just like, you are the last mech alive. You're outnumbered. You're not going to win. Punch out, punch out. She's like, no, hold on. I'm going to try something. And she gets annihilated, not listening to her orders. The Axeman. Yes, that's right. It is a fighting robot with guns, but more importantly, it gets up close to you and hits you with a giant Paul Bunyan axe. You're welcome. That is the shit. I am such a big fan. No, I would run it every time. Do not even care if it's good. I get that hit on your mech with my axe, and I feel like a big boy.
I was not a fan of the axe.
Anyway, Kylie gets wrecked, fails the simulation, and she just gets torn down. In the locker room afterwards, they're like, you know, that was your shot. She's like, come on, man, one more shot. But it's like, you didn't listen to your orders.
Yeah.
They're not going to pass you, lady. Had you just lost and punched out, you would be on the team. You were incapable of listening to others. That is not an admirable quality in a fighting robot pilot.
Okay, first of all, if she was a dude, you would be like, oh, it's just like Top Gun. This is essentially what Tom Cruise does in Top Gun. He also doesn't follow orders. But because it's a lady in a tank top with a bandana, you're not on board.
Ladies in tank tops with bandanas, truly my thing.
Yeah,
that being said, I was not a fan of Top Gun, not following orders either. There is a chain of command TVs, Gina Ippolito, and you have to follow it to stay alive.
I will posit this, however. I really hope that it comes back around like in episode 12 or something like that, because we all remember what just happened to the last guy who popped out of his mech.
It did not go well.
No. So I would say that popping out of your mech like that and coming down in a parachute, dude, you're in the middle of a bunch of fighting robots. You don't want a parachute. You want little boosters to get you the F out of there and away from all of the robots that just killed you.
Or eject you so far away from the battlefield that they can't catch you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It would be like if you're in a dark alley, a bugger comes out, is like, give me your money. And you're like, ah, poof, and you popped your brain out to like save, you know, the important part of your body. And then a little like, poof.
Wait, what?
Parachute comes out, and then the mugger can just grab your brain and stab it with the knife. Come on now. This is brain saving 101. That's all I'm saying.
No, hold on. I need to unpack this. Wait a minute. Hold on. Robert Clark.
Go ahead and picture it. Picture it.
You
pop your brain out
of a mugging situation. Now he's only after your wallet.
Uh-huh.
You could just give him your wallet in this particular case.
But you know, the next thing, as soon as, you know, it's like if you give a mouse a cookie, if you give a mugger your wallet, the next thing is going to take your brain.
That is actually the sequel to a give a mouse a cookie. If you give a mugger your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I'm still not following the part about popping your brain out of your head.
I'm just saying that if you pop your brain out of your head, you want it to go far, far away to escape the mugger and not just like, boop, here I am. I'm right next to the exploded mech that was once my home.
I'm still not following, but I'm ready to move on.
We're on the same page is what I'm saying.
I think
Gina
so.
Is already checked out and is asleep.
That's fine. Yep. That's fine. We get Gina for as long as we get her. Chan, I need to ask for a sound poll here, though, because they have, it's as if it's like in every children's show in this Battletech universe, everybody knew this exact same phrase at the exact same cadence, and it made me so happy. If we could hear it now, because this is good advice.
Information is ammunition.
All right,
I
that's
love
weird.
It. Give me that. Give me drone speech of good information. Because information is ammunition. I could see like an episode of G.I. Joe ending with that, or Mr. Rogers. I could see it.
That's true. Don't lump Mr. Rogers into that.
No, G.I. Joe had better advice. You're right.
I mean, I could see the whole magical kingdom all saying at the same time, information is ammunition.
Mm-hmm. Wartime Mr. Rogers was a whole other animal. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Yeah, 3050 Mr. Rogers is a motherfucker.
No, that dude's murdered. So, like, keep it real. I know it's an urban legend, but it's got to be true, right? You can't be that calm and nice and not have three bodies. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Announcing a new arrival.
Mr. Potato Head.
Oh, that's me.
Congratulations. It's a potato.
Oh.
It's Mr. Potato Head family. There's Mr., Mrs., and baby too. Potato Head family, I love you. With eyes and ears and hats and noses, you can put them in so many poses. And change your music as 1, 2, 3. Mr. Potato Head family.
I like you, funny baby.
Mr. Potato Head family. New from Hasbro Preschool.
Back to G.I. Joe.
She, and now look, Kylie, it turns out that she has a bloodline. She has a family bloodline with the ruling class of this star system, the Steiners. And she's like,
the dude does.
They both do.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If I remember, if I'm reading this correctly, she's kind of like, dude, for the family, maybe give me another go. And all the other pilots kind of like turn like sideways. They're like, what are you going to do about her saying that? And he's like, dude, even though you're a Steiner, we can't do that. You failed. We have to keep you to the same standards as everybody else. And all the other pilots are dick and a half. They are awful. They are very mean, very clearly sexist, even the women.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Right in this case.
Wait a minute.
How about another chance for a fellow Somersetter?
No.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
You're just from the same planet.
He has the royal bloodline. She's from the same hometown. Yeah. Excuse me. I totally got that wrong. Okay. Yeah. But he does still have the bloodline. The point is, though, she does not deserve special treatment, friend. She also doesn't listen to orders.
She's real bad at it.
I don't know of anybody deserving it.
You just hate women.
Well, I mean,
how
here's
dare
the thing.
You? First off, I voted for a woman back in 2016, and Tulsi Gabbard did not win.
Oh, nice! I like you. What you did there with the switch. I'm kind of intrigued because what it sets up is that, like, she is a pilot, a really good pilot. She's trying to become a mech pilot. And there's this dude who's like, no, and he's not mad at her because, like, oh, women shouldn't be blah blah blah. He's like, pilots shouldn't be mech drivers. And so he's got a thing about like specialization, and our dude who is not the dude at the beginning that Gina thought he was, but
Scar
is in
Man.
Fact our protagonist.
Scar guy before he got his scar.
Yeah.
This show is not sophisticated enough for time jumps like that. His thing is like, oh, everybody should learn a little bit of everything. And obviously by the end of this episode, turns out she should be a pilot because she's really good at it. She saves all her asses. So it kind of, I mean, in a roundabout way, puts the protagonist in his place in a way that isn't like a real hitch on the head with it. So I kind of liked that.
I did too. I didn't understand that pilots shouldn't be mechs. Where else do we get mech pilots from? Like, I mean, what other organizations, what other job descriptions do you go? It's like, a pilot shouldn't be astronauts. It's like, well, where else would you find them?
The documentary Robot Jock should tell you that. Okay. Children. Actually,
Man, I'm glad you brought up Robot Jocks, because I was gonna. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
That checks out.
I saw it in theaters. I saw it in movie theaters. And when I was in college, I wrote a term paper about Robot Jocks, comparing the themes of Robot Jocks to actual events of the Cold War. And I will have you know, I straight up got an A. I crushed it. Robot Jocks, top 10 all-time movie.
Stop saying Robot Jocks.
Robot Jocks is great. They're racist against test tube babies. They call them tubies who go to tube school. It is wonderful. A lot of butts in that movie too. If you're a fan of buns, you get buns. Welcome to the mid 90s, ladies and gentlemen. That's as BattleTech as we got back in the day. And then this came out. I never knew BattleTech had a cartoon. Anyway, so okay. Let's see here. Let's get up to speed. They are all from the outer periphery, and we cut over to the Royal Palace. The Steiner Royal Palace, right? This is where we meet like the queen, basically. She's in charge. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of looking kind of defeated right now. She's upset. She's kind of like, oh, woe is me-ing. How could we possibly defeat an enemy we know nothing about? And in my brain, I went, well, the clans don't know a lot about you either, and they didn't seem to have a problem with it. Sorry, queen.
Wait, is the guy that's a dick with the red hair that's like, oh, you're like, look, you come from a legacy family, like, fuck you. Is that not the same as the bad guy, but just in a time jump?
No. No, that is not the same as the bad guy.
So he doesn't, like, jump into the future and get green shit all over his face and
get radicalized? No, I don't think we made a time jump, Gina. I think it said the same year every single time it jumped, and I'm trying not to make fun of you for it, but here we are.
No, at this point, I believe Gina is in on the joke. But, as always, I'm only 95% sure.
I'll never tell.
I'm just trying to let it go, but you keep saying it over and over again.
I mean, what's the point of making him a dick if it's not gonna go into the future and it turns out now he's a bad guy?
Before we go on, I do want to play a clip that I was particularly fond of. As we know, our protagonist is part of the Steiner family, and he has a long...
You're not.
Bit about math, which it didn't make sense why it would be in there, but I do feel like it's important.
You know, they say all men are created equal, but you look at me and you look at Small Joe and you can see that statement is not true. See, normally if you go one-on-one with another wrestler, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm a genetic freak and I'm not normal. So you got a 25% at best at beating me. And then you add Kurt Angle to the mix, your chances of winning drastically go down. See, the three-way at Sacrifice, you got a 33 1/3 chance of winning. But I got a 66 2/3 chance of winning because Kurt Angle knows he can't beat me, and he's not even going to try. So, Samoa Joe, you take your 33 1/3 chance minus my 25% chance, and you got an 8 1/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. But then you take my 75% chance of winning.
If we just keeps going.
And add 66 2/3%, I got 141 2/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice.
I've never been happier on this show.
I really must have zoned out during this cartoon because I don't remember that at all.
No, it gets weird. It gets weird, Gina.
It's really weird.
Is that before or after the time jump?
The important thing is when you go to Bob Iger, you got to play him that clip and say, this is the crux of the series. This is what it all means.
Gina, how do you feel about chainmail headwear? Look, I love the fact that I have all of these references in the chamber and Chan just keeps getting to them first. I don't even have to make them. I have a line here about the only Steiner family I respect is Rick and Scott from the University of Michigan. But no, Robert Clark Chan is here for me today, and I could not be more overjoyed. I have never heard that clip before, but I had a feeling I was going to love it walking in the door.
And what, you've never heard that?
I've never heard that before, and I love it.
It's classic.
I've been watching a lot of, honestly, like on Instagram. For some reason, my Instagram stories love to show me Scott Steiner videos right now.
No, that checks out.
Somehow I hit that algo, and I'll keep clicking on him. Quite honestly, Big Papa Pump is your hookup. I could talk about Scott Steiner for like a half hour, but I won't for Gina's sake.
One of these days we'll get Gina to a pay-per-view and she's going to discover the love for professional wrestling she never knew she had.
I don't think that's what's going to happen. Anyway.
Gina, you know what you need is another thing to watch that is, 5 hours a week plus a monthly 6-hour pay-per-view. Then, of course, you can then branch out into either WWE or AEW. On top of that, there's NJPW. Stardom is a wonderful Japanese promotion. And then we can start getting into TNA, MLW. You can start going to the shows here.
Next Generation, Hollywood. Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine Federation is real good. Real good.
Not a fan of Deep Space Nine. Not my favorite property of the Star Trek universe.
You go to hell.
We've talked about this before. I think Next Generation is wildly better than Deep Space Nine.
We are doing our rewatch of Deep Space Nine currently. Oof. We're in deep into season two, and it's lovely.
Deep into Oof. Deep Space Nine?
Deep. Double deep. Double
Balls
deep.
Deep?
Is that, is that your new Nine? Podcast, Chan?
Balls Deep.
Balls Deep Space Nine.
There we go. That's the name of it.
I mean, it's right there.
I pitch that. Yeah.
You can't be on it, Gina.
Oh, my God. So, okay. So, our hero, whose name I don't even written down here. Is that Cousin
Scott Steiner.
Adam?
Just go ahead and say Scott Steiner.
I'll say Scott Steiner. He basically pitches to the Queen, the Archon, whatever. Somerset, we got to go. We got to fight these guys right now. We get a crew. And she's like, no, go F yourself. We just don't have time for that. He goes, well, you were just complaining that you don't know anything about the enemy. What if I take a small crew, test their defenses, get you tactical data, and then we can report back, and then you can use that to form a strategy. Great idea. She says, I love that idea. I have no ships to give to you. And then almost as if the greatest transition, we're suddenly away from them and onto a totally different crew of a spaceship we know nothing about other than they are a civilian merchant vessel who are smugglers. See where we're going with this, ladies and gentlemen. They have a distress signal from some sort of orbital thing, and the one guy says it is a trap. You shut it down. Don't even answer them. And then the actual captain of the ship goes, no, if they are an actual distress signal and we ignore them, we're going to get shunned from all of the spaceports. You can't do that. He takes them in, and it turns out it was a trap. It was the cops going undercover to bust smugglers. I should point out that the second in command here seems to be Japanese. His name, what was his name?
His name is Franklin Sakamoto.
Franklin Sakamoto.
And Chan was so disgusted. Chan was so disgusted when he said that.
That's not what I'm sighing about. What I'm sighing about is, this is a big leap. And my overall feeling about the show is that it's a very adult sensibility and structure and depth of information being fed to you. But it is sanded down with like a sort of child cartoon sensibility. So like, you don't see the guy getting murdered. The emotionality of it isn't really made complex in that way. But like the storytelling is you know, like really good. And so we're jumping to this completely different group of people and establishing all of these folks because they're going to be a big part of it. But they establish it by their being a super diverse crew, and the diversity you can tell by their accents, which are abominable.
They'll take my license and the sheep.
Chikataganai. Proceed with the docking.
So that was, and it took me a while, that was a German accent.
Yes.
Followed by a Japanese accent.
Wait, isn't it better that they're isn't it better that they're not so stereotypical that it takes you a second to figure them out?
No, they're just bad.
The accent
they're
bad.
An American trying to do a German accent. In the way that I would do a German accent by watching commercials from the 80s and pretending that it's real.
Wait a minute, Gina. Gina, do you have a Korean accent in the chamber ready to go?
Yes, it's this. Hello, I am Korean.
Wow, that is racist as shit, dude. Oh my god.
South Koreans who've lived in Southern California for a long time.
Wow.
That's
what they all sound like though, dude. Good job.
I nailed it.
But so this raiding party in this trapped distress beacon, they're basically Team America of World Police. And I asked Cham for the sound pull here because I could not believe what this dude shouts as he storms in to kick everybody's ass on this smuggling vessel.
Konnichiwa, Kirita Crepes.
Wow.
Wait, Konnichiwa, Kirita what? Creeps. What creeps?
Is it Korita?
It's the name of their, like, planet.
Yeah. All of these, like, each house is like largely Asian and largely European. Kurita, Japanese, but it comes out like Kurita.
Yeah, it's like Konnichiwa. Somerset. Somerset is where all the white people live. Like that's just what it is, you know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Konnichiwa is a nice thing to say before you shoot a Japanese guy, I suppose. At least it's respectful.
Yeah, it could be worse.
I was shocked. I was shocked to hear him say that. That was amazing. My jaw hit the ground. He busts them for being smugglers. They're like, we're not smugglers. He reaches over to like one crate, pulls on it slightly, and like 900 laser rifles fall out of it. It's like, uh-oh!
Also, during this whole sequence, they sort of visually establish that they're in zero G unless, and so they're wearing mag boots and that's how they're staying, you know, like on the ground or whatever.
Or on the ceiling.
But they're super lazy about it. So they look just like they're standing normally. Except that like, yeah, when he bashes open the crates, the guns just go floating off.
It was great.
Instead of falling down.
I call that good television.
Like that's the only difference. And I'm like, you're drawing it. You can just have them floating. You can have all the people floating.
That's too much.
Or you can have them not floating and just say there's anti-gravity.
Chad, every piece of motion costs money.
Right. So just let that part go and just be like, we have artificial gravity. Things move like they normally do. And not just have like, everything is normal except for the guns and like some apples. Yeah. He bushes open a grate full of apples.
So I just wrote this note here. How long is it going to take them to steal this particular ship for their mission? Cut back to immediately Archon Televid back with Cousin Adam. And he says, hey, I got this ship for you. We just stole it.
I kind of like that.
I was so happy. It was so good. Hey, and here's the record. She wasn't bullshitting. She came through. She said, yeah. I like your plan. I don't have a ship to give you. That's the problem. Now I have a ship. First person I call, let's try your plan. I like her leadership in this moment.
Yeah.
And now
you like women again. Okay.
I don't like it when they're saying, oh, woe is me. But I do like it when they're tough. That's why my biopic I'm working on, Margaret Thatcher, a real great leader, will be hitting 2025 on direct to YouTube.
Direct to the, what is the ONY network? What is that What is that?
The OAN? Is that what you're talking about?
Thank you. That's the one. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm not gonna bother learning.
DailyWire.com should be giving me a call right now, is what I'm saying. They made Lady Ballers. They can make my Margaret Thatcher biopic that is made only with G.I. Joe action figures.
What? No, you need to cast Gina Carano in this picture.
She can be the voice of Margaret Thatcher as portrayed through the action figure of the Baroness. This was grand. Compared to what we normally watch, this was grand television. This is like watching Breaking Bad after Tiger King. This is epic.
That
wonderful.
It is different. There is a qualitative difference in what they're doing here than what they're doing in a lot of the stuff we watch. Let's not start dragging the good names of peak TV into this, because it's not that good. At the end of the day, it's still 1994 Saban.
You've never watched Breaking Bad, Chan.
I have watched Battlestar Galactica, though, and I cringe every time you bring it up.
All three of us now have made a Battlestar Galactica reference in reference to BattleTech the show. Worthwhile television. Anyway, we're at the AFFC Space Force, and we are... What is happening right now?
Is the show over yet? At you. I've got a kitten.
That was... No one is happy that you... There's a little Fallout 4 pop-up that said no one liked that. Nobody. Anyway, we're heisting the ship. It turns out that Kylie is a fairy jock. I kind of like this. She goes, well, after I didn't pass, this happened very quickly, apparently. After I didn't pass through the test to be a mech pilot, I got bumped down to a fairy pilot. So now I'm your person to take you to this spaceship. And I'm just sort of like, you know what? I like that. I like that she comes from a place of weakness, but made it work for her. And she's going to weasel her way in here. Good character moments.
Yeah.
Dig it. And so they basically, the good guys show up on the ship with all the smugglers and they say, hey, you know, our people don't get along. We did just steal your ship and commission it for this. Here's the deal. And tell me I'm wrong here. They're like, join us on this suicide mission or you can just leave. And nobody says we'll leave.
They say that they want to go.
They say that, well, here's the deal, because the smugglers immediately turn the tables on the good guys, and they say, how about instead we kick your ass off our ship and get out of here? And then Adam, the leader of the good guys, turns it around again and says, or how about I kick your ass instead? And I was like, this is exciting.
We would rather eat vegan slug rots than serve with filthy FedCom sleeves.
Yes, I agree. That's there.
But wasn't leaving just leaving on the table, or were they leaving for prison? Was that the whole deal?
Yeah. Well, he says
you can continue your duties aboard the drop ship Kwaidan and jump ship Katana, but under my command.
Yeah. So unclear if they're just going to let him go. Or just dump him into space?
Yeah, because they give him a second opportunity. If we complete the mission and don't die,
yeah,
we will free you. You will not be, your criminal charges will all be dropped. And literally every single member of the crew is like, go F yourself. They are not happy with this arrangement at all. But their leader, the German guy, is like, actually, I think that sounds like a pretty good deal. Everybody's like, oh, all right, fine. I guess it's a good deal then.
Yeah, the Japanese guy, Franklin, he ain't having it. He's got some daddy issues, it seems like.
It does.
But the German guy is like...
Captain Hawkins wearing a beret.
Highest bidder, baby. Let's do this.
Or I'm sorry. Beret guy with Captain Hawkins was the Team America World Police guy who said, konnichiwa, bitches. And he's talking all this shit. And all of a sudden, Adam turns to him and he goes, hey, you're also enlisted as part of this crew. He's like, he does like the Pokemon Pikachu face. What? Like, you didn't think that was going to be part of the deal, mother effer?
Yeah, this is straight up press gang situation. Where,
are you telling me that if you're a badass merc in space, in the future, and all racism has been obliterated, you clearly wouldn't not at some point say konnichiwa bitches to someone.
I mean, I
he I says it now. He says it now. That's the problem.
I have no
he also
I will not be taking questions at this time.
He also says this.
Not too neighborly now, is it, Baka boy?
Again, Baka means stupid in Japanese.
Okay.
It feels a little bit like a predecessor to Serenity, where they just throw in like random ass Chinese.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Or like Deadwood, when you were like, I can't tell if this is racist or if it's predates specific racism, or if, like when they're like, when he's like, oh, the Celestials, I'm like, ah, is that Asians? What's happening?
Oh, that's old racism.
They're definitely saying it with the tone that says racist, but also I've never heard the term before.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, let's do that. Look, and this is where I made the note here. Like, this is moving very, very fast, but I'm into it. I do not hate this. Like, we are not stewing in any particular moment. We are going A, B, C, D, E, F, all the way through the alphabet for this episode. And I did not have any trouble following it. So I know it was good.
I mean, it is like of your misspent childhood, there is a subset of that information that you gathered in that period that is now finally being put to use.
How about so that?
It makes sense that you would be over the moon realizing that something finally that you've done has had some sort of meaning.
Is that is that why my brain hurts right now from just the workout?
Possibly.
Oh good. We get introduced to Banshees, which are experimental arrow fighters. So you got the fighting robots, and then you got the blaster spaceships. Good for it. We're going to make a jump into the Hamilton star system and begin this mission since we're all on board. And they finish the jump and immediately start getting blown the F out by a fleet. And hold I on. Was like, this before, is Battlestar Galactica. I'll it is say
not,
it.
It is not Battlestar Galactica.
It's Battlestar Galactica.
And I'm going to play this. Just so that we all remember that racism may be dead in the year 3050, but it's still super cringy.
Muchas gracias, Major.
That is that's her Mexican accent. So great, great,
excellent,
great.
Excellent.
Have no notes. The super hard German accent, the super bad Japanese accent, and then muchas gracias, Major.
If she put a little flavor on it, you would hate it. Isn't it better to be as white as possible when you're maybe or maybe not being racist? I can't tell anymore. It's 3050.
I thought she was being facetious. I thought she was kind of saying it bad on purpose, like she was like over it, you know?
Her culture? She's over her culture?
Is that her culture? I thought they were all
they're all what?
I thought they were all white people in that crew. But that was the whole point of this whole, like, neighborhood. It's a gated community. That's what Somerset is. It's a gated community of white people.
Fair enough.
I mean, I don't think it's wrong. Yeah, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I don't live in a gated community. Yet. Can't wait to get away from all these people. anyway, I mean... I'm not making Diddy money yet, you know. Although after he bought Twitter, maybe I am making Diddy money.
What?
Did you not see he was part of the team that financially backed Elon's purchase of Twitter, along with a bunch of Russian oligarchs and Saudi Arabian princes?
Wow.
And Diddy.
That's.
And they all lost a lot of money, but that wasn't the point, was it? Anyway, they're getting blown out the second they make their jump. It turns out it's mercenaries at the behest of our friend Franklin Sakamoto. It's a double cross.
Da, da, da.
Do I dare call this a Pearl Harbor situation?
You don't dare. You absolutely do not.
Then I'm glad I didn't.
Yep. Just pretend that never happened. Although I will be leaving it in.
I mean, sure. Look, I'm talking about the wrestling. We call it a Pearl Harbor in wrestling.
Still not not helpful.
Wait a minute. Wait. Robert Clark Chan, you've been following wrestling for a very long time, followed mm-hmm. many of its biggest personalities, storylines, mm-hmm. gimmicks, yep. and angles. Are mm-hmm. you going to sit here and honest to God tell me that wrestling has been racist in the past and or future?
That the only two people that are allowed to use Pearl Harbor in a wrestling context are Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. Are you Gorilla Monsoon and or Bobby the Brain Heenan?
You know I wish I was on both counts.
I mean, obviously, but you're not, so we can move on.
All right, fine. Report to the mech bay, everybody, because we're going to go out, even though we're out in space, we're going to battle tech the shit out of these idiots.
That is such a bad idea.
I love
it. They don't justify it in any way.
That's all they got. They don't have any good weapons on this merchant civilian ship. They don't have weapons.
So they have
no choice but to put the mechs out in space where they are not supposed to be.
You know what?
And start shooting.
You can try and take your mechs out and maybe place them on your ship and use that as a, you know, like a place to stabilize.
That's what they're trying to do.
A giant ass mech out in the middle of space and then have it fire a bunch of weapons. Do we know Newton's second law?
I wondered a little bit about physics in this, but I'm not sure.
Should wonder a whole lot because it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
I mean, for the record, this plan does not work. They have heavy firepower, but no real way to aim it and no real way to stop the mechs from floating away from the ship. They have to start grabbing each other to stop it from happening.
Yeah. The thing is, they wouldn't float away from the ship. They would go careening off into space at high velocity because they have huge-ass artillery cannons on them.
Well, this is from the year 3050, Chan. They've solved the physics problem.
You don't know what they got going on.
Yeah. Are you saying that the artillery that they're shooting doesn't have much velocity and or impact?
See, this is where you don't know BattleTech. Mechs are loaded with what are called heat sinks, and they diffuse the energy, allowing for the mechs to get faster reloads and not overheat. Because in BattleTech, overheating is a huge part of the game. You can't just blow all your weapons every turn, or your mech overheats and shuts down. So they're using the heat sinks to diffuse the energy. Chan, this makes sense if you stop thinking about it.
Do you know what heat they're sinking? Because laser heat is not the same as kinetic energy, which is what we're putting into the bullets so that the bullets will hit the bad guys very hard, and so they will stop moving.
They're shooting lasers very clearly.
And gigantic fuck-off missiles.
Okay, they are shooting some gigantic, yeah, okay. Well, listen. Oh, look, a squirrel. So... Their targeting system got messed up, so the smugglers are shooting missiles at the ship, who doesn't have great shields, and so one of the mechs is like, I'm going to fire off these things, which give off a heat signal, and then the missiles target in on them, and they blow up away from the ship. I thought that was very, very cool. Kylie then shows up in one of these Banshee mechs we talked about, not mechs, Banshee fighter jets, and she gets it done. She starts blowing them out. And these are dead mercenaries. There is no parachutes in space. They're not living anymore.
That was
they're
the unaliving. Original catch, the original tagline for Alien. There are no parachutes in space.
You know, I would have seen it an extra time if it was called that. Yeah, murdering everywhere, and so the battle's over. They get Franklin to call him off, or you know, basically. Oh, I'm sorry. That hasn't quite happened yet, but they repel the mercenaries. They get back and they're like, Kylie, you know, you're going, you're being you. You're doing stuff nobody asked you to. This one time it worked, but often it does not. You're going to be in trouble. She's like, how can I be in trouble when I'm under your command? I forged your name on these transfer documents to join your unit. And he's like, oh,
I don't hate that.
I love her character. Like, this is phenomenal. She's doing a lot of character stuff that isn't always working. It's wonderful. In this particular case, the rest of the crew's like, yo, she proved herself. She fills a need we clearly have. And no, if you just say you did this, there is no more red tape. She's on our team. And he's like, I guess I did this then. We're calling ourselves the Somerset Strikers. I don't care where you people are from. I'm from Somerset and I'm of royal blood. That's what we're called, dickheads.
And also, we're named after a football team, I assume.
I no, but, you know, a soccer team more likely.
I said what I said. It's 30-50. Ain't nobody calling it soccer anymore.
Wow. Well, I guess we'll find out in 12 more episodes because we're doing every episode of BattleTech. Yeah. Knowing is half the battle. I'm getting that commitment from Chan and Gina right now. Are we doing all 13 episodes of BattleTech? This was wonderful.
I still have no idea what's going on.
Oh, Jesus. To wrap up the episode, Draconis High Command, we got wrecked. So this is the Korean folks. This is where Franklin Sakamoto's from. And he says, I am the leader of Draconis High Command. Those aliens showed up where we were too and just beat the shit out of us. So here's the deal. I know we don't get along, but this is existential threat situation. I am giving you all the order to work together. We must work together as the groups of systems to repel this threat. And that's when he says, Cousin Adam says, for my brother Andrew, for Somerset, we are going to do this. Hurrah! And they all decide to work together. And so everybody's on the same page, basically. But they aren't, which makes it interesting.
I love that this does... has some holdover from classic 1980s conceptions of what Asian culture is and fully assumes that 1,000 years from now, it's going to be exactly the same it was in the early 80s or the Western perception of Asia in the early 80s.
The coordinator himself hopes that his subjects will do nothing to bring him dishonor.
Okay.
Listen, for those subjects... of you...
And they're all concerned about honor and shame and dishonor. And
you know what? Email the show, you people listening to this podcast in the year 3050. Uh-huh. I want to know, does this hold up? Is this what your life is like in 3050? Send us knowingishalfthepodcast@gmail.com. Send us an email and let us know. I'll be keeping an eye on my inbox.
I will say. That as an Asian youth in the 80s, absolutely every time I played MechWarrior, it was, you know, as the Draconis Combine, because it's a cool name. They got the best logo.
They do.
I mean, what more could you want?
See?
But, you know.
And then, I don't know why we need this last scene, but for a quick cutback, we head back to Somerset, where everybody is being taken away in chains. You fight for the clans now, or you mine for the clans now. I mean, you know what that means. And then we get that saying, like, and that's the end of the episode. Let's go.
Yeah.
Excellent. This is 10 out of 10. No notes. This is an excellent program. I was overjoyed. Not clear when I saw Ruby Spears, not 100% clear if this was going to, like, be okay or not. And it was the adult themes got me, the Battlestar Galactica-ness got me, and I like BattleTech. I like mech stuff. So, like, this is a must watch. We rarely get a must watch from Knowing Is Half the Podcast. I give it my highest mark. Hashtag Ray says watch this.
I thought it was fine.
It was fine.
That is as close to an everybody loves it as this show has ever
That's
had.
Actually probably true.
Highest marks in show history. A couple of good enoughs from you two and 10 out of 10 from me. That puts us squarely in the 7.5 category, which is great. Great.
I do think it was interesting. Everyone keep an eye out in 3 years when I get my version on the air.
Here's the deal. I will watch. It will be delightful. This is great.
I will sue you for consultant credit.
I assume we're getting our names or voices in there somewhere. What are we talking about right now?
The only thing you will get on there is at the very end of the first season, I pop out of the side and I say, Ray, Jan, konnichiwa, bitches.
And then she guns us down. Yeah, that makes. I'm okay going out like that.
It's fitting, really. And who is snorting into the microphone, Gina? Are you allergic to cats? Is this a newly developed thing?
No, I've always been allergic to cats. And about halfway through this, the new kitten jumped on my lap. But kittens have more dander. So even if you're fine with adult cats, sometimes kittens set it off.
Yeah.
I'm really just trying to get you guys to finish this fucking podcast.
We have some scenes to go. I actually have quite a few notes to go. We're working on it, Gina. This was...
Hey, you. No. Don't look over here. Keep your eyes on the road. Got something for you. Take a listen to this.
In the newest Pokemon, they have Score Bunny, which is a starter.
What?
Yes.
Score Bunny?
So it's a fire bunny that plays soccer. He kicks balls.
He scores. Great.
Score, like Scorch, I think. Yeah. Oh, I get it. Like goal. Like score.
Rad.
There's Score Bunny, who uses his mad soccer skills to steal, I think, like donuts or something like that.
How does he use his soccer skills to steal donuts?
He kicks it.
Oh, yummy.
The best part is, though, Score Bunny wants to go and follow Ash and go on big adventures. But
oh my
Ash
god,
is like,
Ash is still the main character of the anime?
Yes, where have you been? Yeah, so Ash is like, I'm getting on the train. I'm leaving, Score Bunny. And Score Bunny's
is it
like...
because he's 80 years old? That's why he sounds like that? Nothing makes donuts taste better than a foot coming in contact with them.
If you like what you heard and love co-op with your friends, check out Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast.